Thank you, Paul. I hope I'm successful in linking them together. You know, the proof will be in the pudding, as they say.
The proof of the pudding is in the eating, right? You have to eat it.
Well, okay. Anyway, yes, I think he's right in terms of maybe part of the attraction of this talk is I sort of felt, well, to get people here, I just throw everything at them. And at least try to come up with some way of tying them together. As Paul said, I am associated with Slack. Used to be the Slack Stanford Linear Accelerator Center. Now it's the Slack National Accelerator Laboratory, which is the High Energy Physics and Basic Energy Science Laboratory at Stanford. And one of the reasons I mention this is really trying to also put a little context in terms of the work there with respect to my topic. So a lab like Slack, which is a major international research lab, you know, clearly lives for data, lots of data, and for high-performance computing. You know, that's really its product, if you think about it, in terms of why it exists. And so what Slack does, you know, in terms of collecting this data, it gets it from a lot of different sources. You know, experiments, very large experiments, as well as very small sensors. And one of the big jobs, clearly, is to collect all that data and in some ways make it make sense of it all. All right, and here's an example. One of the experiments that's at Slack is called the Linear Coherent Light Source. And this is an example of data. You know, through the end, in the beginning of last year, and you can see that what we collected in 1 month is 6,000 terabytes of data. That's just one experiment in 1 month. Okay, now we can ask the question, is that qualify as big data? Well, if you look at it in a traditional sense, it could say that we have to use about 1.3 million DVDs a month, if that's the way we, you know, store it and maintain the data. So is this big data? Okay. One of the things I want to try to say in this talk is that one of the problems with using that term is really the context. So a lot of people would consider it, certainly, you know, 6,000 terabytes per month to be a huge amount of data. Okay, we'll come back to that example. But about my talk title, okay? One premise, I believe, is the fact that, you know, you see terms like big data, data science, and the Internet of Things, is that somehow they've lost their meaning. They've kind of been caught up in the hype. They've kind of become buzzwords. You know, they've kind of become things that you have with marketing and advertising. You know, especially in some way that shows that you are technologically up to date. But the real question is there anything new there? Is there anything that you can really put together meaningful, associated, beyond these buzzwords? And so the question then is, how can I possibly put them together in a single time? Because if I believe that, not only am I talking about hype, but I'm talking about hype cubed, which is big hype. No one's ever used that term. Okay? So, but the reason I put them together is because I think that they are intimately related and that they have a future of being a part of what I view as being a convergence of technology that I think is going to significantly affect the future of computing and the future of computing applications. Okay. So if we take these three areas, big data, the Internet of Things, and data analytics, or data science, in that way, you know, we sort of have to think about how they might relate to one another, you know, in this kind of relationship. And what we have at the intersection is what really, how do these things really share? You know, what do they share? How do they influence each other? How do they impact the growth of each other? And how can that particular thing impact the future of computing? So I would say that when you're talking about big data and data analytics, that's pretty well understood of what the problem is. And there are some new exciting technologies that have been developed in order to deal with large data sets and to do really high performance analytics. The relationship between big data and the Internet of Things, however, it's predicted. It's not very well understood, except for the fact that by definition, the Internet of Things is going to create a lot of data. And that's going to be one of its primary relationships. As far as the relationship between the Internet of Things and analytics, that's predicted. But once again, I would contend that it's not very well understood. So that means that in terms of that intersection, what I see, you know, between the combination of things that are understood and predicted and the things for which we see potential, that this can provide us with an exciting new area of research and application, an exciting new platform on which very interesting work can possibly be built. Okay? So, I'm going to start off by being argumentative in one way of saying, so for my definition of big data, I'm going to say it's not new. That when we think about it, like in the case of LCLS, what we're really all only talking about is scale. Is matter of scale. Okay? Data analytics is not new, but it has grown in complexity, you know, mainly to accommodate the four V's that you have if you're familiar with big data: velocity, veracity, and those kinds of factors that are associated with it. As far as the Internet of Things, there's nothing like it. There's nothing that we can build upon it that we've seen in the past. Okay? So, I think that you see, and certainly if you believe the hype, which we're talking about that we use, that one of the big promises, or one of the big expectations that you have in the big data and the Internet of Things is supposed to be these amazing new insights, this amazing new understanding, and possibly, you know, whole new knowledge. Basically, the idea that answers and knowledge is in those data sets. All we have to do is figure out how to get it out. Okay? And so the key component between data, insight, and knowledge is analytics, data mining. Coming up with ways, as it were, to squeeze out the significant things that we hope to find in these big data sets. Now, also the key concepts that we had there, I think with respect to those three items, is this idea of a platform, which I'll describe, and the innovation that that platform provides. Okay? Because of themselves, they don't necessarily reflect an innovation. It's the application of them as a platform that is really going to be the exciting new area. Okay? And this has been described in some instances, you know, as the fourth platform. Okay? As you can see, sort of the evolution as it tracks with the development of computing. You know, going from mainframe, early PCs, standalone machines that didn't have so many users, didn't have so many applications, up through distributed systems to cloud computing, And the promise that we have by putting those three technologies together is the possibility of what's often referred to as ambient computing. So this is billions of users, apps, and sensors. Now, one thing you might see when you say that, billions of users, you know, there's only a small billion number of people on the planet, right? So is this suggesting that this platform is going to provide services to everybody on Earth? The answer is no, because some of those users are not going to be humans. They're going to be other systems which can operate as users, which have the same status network-wise as human users. And they're going to be able effectively to have, you know, a network of size that we can't really imagine. It's probably not really infinite. But certainly the way in which it might be used could give the semblance of being infinite. So this is mixing like the Internet of Things, machine intelligence, and very creative types of interfaces. But once again, like on that previous slide, what's really driving this whole thing is clearly going to be data and data analytics. Okay? So this, what I believe then, if we really see that this fourth platform is a goal, then what critical elements that we're going to have are going to be data science, the Internet of Things. Actually, that other one was supposed to represent big data, data science, and the Internet of Things. I went too fast on that slide. So those are the critical items that we want to explore, you know, with respect to the potential of that fourth platform. Okay. So I made the comment that big data and the Internet of Things and data science are innovation platforms. What do I mean by that? Basically, when I refer to a platform, I say that they provide an infrastructure upon which we build in applications. So for example, you know, if you look at something as simple as the Internet, and who thought that we'd ever say that? You know, the Internet is a platform, but what we have seen built on that platform are things like the web, things like email, Twitter. All of those are really innovative applications that were built on the Internet platform. And so we can ask ourselves now, what are the innovative and advanced applications that we might be able to build on these platforms? Okay? I don't like the term big data. I kind of suggested that when I said we've always had big data, because in some ways it's too vague. It really doesn't give you a great deal of information. But at least the concept in some way has really spun off new ideas and new tools and solutions and things like that. So people are attempting to think of big data as a platform for innovation. Okay? But I would also contend that a lot of those applications that you see aren't really, are maybe too focused and really don't have a larger picture like we might want to have if we like this model of the fourth platform. Okay? And the Internet of Things, once again in this hype, you know, certainly may well have the potential, or does have the potential, of dwarfing big data, because in some ways it clearly encompasses big data. Okay, so what are the innovation possibilities for this that I see? You know, are the ideas like dynamic contextual services, you know, basically realization of context, you know, where you are, what you can do, all of those things that you might see associated with context. Shared perception and learning. Shared perception between all of those entities that might be on that huge network. Ecosystem domination. Okay? Immediately composable apps. That's what we're saying in this particular case, with a system of that, you know, you can think about apps being built on demand, apps being built at the speed of need, because there's the knowledge incorporated about that would define presumably what all the requirements for those apps might be. We can think that other possibilities would be fully digital business models, you know, where we don't attempt to take existing business models and try to actually just port them over to a new technology. And ways in which we can augment our use of time. We can base, that's always been one of the big dreams of computing, is how we in fact, you know, can in fact offload those things that we have to do and focus on those things that we would like to do and can be creative in. And then thinking in terms of digital communities. We saw that with respect, again, to the network. But think about them in terms of institutions. So these are some of the, just a few of some of the possible fourth platform possibilities. Now, one thing I always like to refer to is the Gartner hype cycle, you know, which basically attempts to track new technologies and where they stand with respect to the initial excitement about them, and finally perhaps the realization that they might not meet that excitement, and then finally when they maybe redefine themselves in terms of becoming useful. Now, this is the current of these hype cycles, and it's interesting to me that you can see that those three areas that we're talking about, big data, data science, and the Internet of Things, are almost symmetrical on this hype cycle. If you believe this, in that case, data science is still experiencing a hype. The Internet of Things has, now people are questioning its utility, and big data, people are starting to wonder, is it really everything that was promised? So it's interesting that those three are sort of in conjunction with one another in this hype cycle. Okay? All right, so I made this comment. It's official. The Internet of Things takes over big data as the most hyped technology. Well, that's good for people who write, who are pundits. That's good for people who are investors and those kinds of things. But really, what is the value that you have in hyping this technology? It's sink or swim in IoT's ocean of bigger, not just big data, but bigger data. You don't understand what big data is. How can you possibly understand what bigger data is? Okay, well, what does that mean? So instead of hype, when we think about these platforms, I want to encourage you to sort of think about evolution, you know, how these systems can evolve, as opposed to revolution by saying, how are these systems going to just change everything? You know, how can we perhaps view a lot of these ideas as not necessarily new ideas, but recasting of fundamental ideas? Okay? And then, as we saw on that other slide, how do each of these elements individually contribute to something that is bigger than any of them individually? Okay, so the data deluge. Now, when you talk about big data, this is the kind of thing that you see. Okay, you see numbers like this. You know, from the beginning of recorded time, man generated 5 exabytes of data. First off, I said, how can anybody know that? Right? But, or you see things like, in by 2011, the same amount of data was generated every 2 days. Well, how is that helping me? All I'm doing is being overwhelmed, in this case, by some of these statistics. Or in 2013, the same amount was generated every 10 minutes. So, you know, when you see definitions of big data that are based on numbers, I don't put a great deal of credibility in them. So for 2015, who cares? We just know it's going to be a lot, right? Who cares what the real numbers are? Okay? Okay, so here's an example. Right? Everyone's familiar with a table like this that talks about kilobytes, megabytes, etc., all the way up to yottabytes. Right? Is there anybody in here who knows what decabytes are? Or knows what hectobytes are? Decabytes are tens of bytes. Hectobytes are hundreds of bytes. Why don't we ever think about them? Because they're meaningless. They've fallen off the radar. But at one time, decabytes and hectobytes were a big deal. You know, we talked about machines that had 6.4 hectobytes of memory. 640K. So it's just a matter, and that seemed like a lot. So it's just a matter of scale. So, you know, when you look at that, once again, you're looking at these ridiculous numbers, right? I had never heard of, before doing this thing, of what a brontobyte is. And so I figured, okay, well, how in some way can you put some meaning to that? Or is it just hype? And the example that I came up with, it's hard to read, is that if you had somehow a device that started generating data at the time of the Big Bang, the beginning of the universe, and it generated 1 megabyte of data per second, and that's not shabby, right? Since the Big Bang, that would only be 10 to the 25th bytes of data. Not even about 1% of a brontobyte. What does that mean? I mean, how can someone grasp those kinds? Here they talked about, before we were talking about data generated since the beginning of recorded records, and here I'm speculating on what's it like if you have data that's generated since the beginning of time. You're still not talking about some of the numbers that get thrown around when you talk about big data. Okay, so where is this data coming from? It's coming from everywhere. Known places, unknown places, visible or invisible, with or without permission. This is the vision of the Internet of Things. And so you would assume then that any communication in a network, anything that's on a network that generates data, is transferring data that's meaningful to someone or something. Otherwise, why is it on there? So that's where this data is coming from. So, you know, if we think about in terms of the classical definition of big data, that means every email, every tweet, every transaction, everything that goes on the network is contributing to big data. And that's where you lead to this idea of things that are connected to the network, namely like sensors, who by definition are supposed to collect and transmit data. So how's this data being consumed? I mean, you see examples that have to do with science, finance, government, and all those. And we'd see about, we have become generators of data. So I say here that Facebook is consuming this data to learn about us. It knows what food we like and what music we like. And advertisers use that. And even Amazon claims to know us well enough to know what we want to buy next. We're feeding into this whole ecosystem of data. All right, so I've been using this term. So my definition for big data is basically going to be a lot simple. It refers to data sets whose size is beyond the ability of single storage devices. That's big data to me. Or beyond the capabilities of classical database or software development tools. At this time. And so this definition that I say is not in terms of data size, but it's data set evolution, right? And clearly then that evolution can vary by sector, by usage, by area. Okay? So I say it's not a new issue. So look at this. This right here was a 5 megabyte disk drive. And that's big data, if by virtue of the fact that it's a big box that takes a forklift to get up on an airplane. 5 megabytes in 1956 was big data. They posed that problem. If you had more than 5 megabytes, you couldn't store it on a single machine. Now, putting that in perspective, I mentioned LCLS. It said that LCLS would require over 1 trillion of these things per month in order to satisfy the requirements for storing the kind of data. Clearly, that's not possible. But LCLS is, in fact, managing to store and analyze those data sets simply because of evolution, not revolution. So data has always been sort of the elephant in the room. And historically, you know, you're going to see all these references to data. And it all has to do with size, but size is not necessarily the most critical thing because, you know, being able to store that data and being able to analyze that data, that's going to happen. Okay, so with the Internet of Things, with respect to data, we can say the Internet of Things is going to be a very noisy place. It's going to be generating a lot of data. You know, if you consider the specifications, like for IPv6, you know, that means that you could have a network that has 10 to the 38th elements on that network, all of which might be generating and collecting data. And some of them are going to be interested in what they have to say. Well, how do you manage these conversations? Certainly in that case, we could say that these ideas of traditional interfaces break down. Okay? You know, you're not going to be able to use the old standard things if you've got thousands of items. You're not going to have a drop-down menu that actually then has thousands of entries on it. Okay? So I say, too, once again, thinking about evolution, that the Internet of Things is itself an example of convergence. And we're going to add these other two technologies to that ongoing convergence. And that's simply because, you say, we have the capability. We have the technological capability to do it. Okay? And some of the hype basically says, you know, the Internet of Things can reliably transform the way business is done. And this particular indication is basically it's not about the technology. They're familiar technologies, but together they're transformational. Okay, so I define what big data was. So what's the Internet of Things to me? I say it's a communications revolution. You know, it is communicating, not just copying. When I say that, you know, in the case of the web, you go to a website and you're copying content that's on that website. Now, you can call that communication if you want, but that's not typically the way people think about what the terminology means, what the term means. And it becomes an interactive universe, not just of objects, but also potentially of ideas, concepts, and processes, both real and virtual. So that's maybe where we can throw in this ideas about insights and knowledge, because we have the potential of dealing with things that are not necessarily tangible, at least tangible in the current sense. And it's a mechanism to connect all these things together. And presence of all of these entities on the Internet of Things suggests then that they have the possibility of not only communicating but building a system of codependence. You know, building some sort of intelligence, as it were, by the way in which they communicate with each other. And once again, it's a platform. So here's what it looks like, but what? The question then clearly is, what can you do with it? Here's my definition of a platform. I think I've already said that. Is looking for innovation and looking for opportunities. Okay? And I mentioned our perception about the internet platform. And if you think about the web as an example of an innovation that got built on the internet, you know, you can see that idea that the strength of the web is not the number of servers or the number of pages that it has. So if someone says, the web's got 20 billion pages, first off, how does anybody know? You know, that's just like those big data things. Really, what relevance? The question is, the strength of it is not the number of pages or the number of servers, but what can you do with them? What innovative things can you do with that platform? And clearly, we've seen advancements in a lot of different areas. Okay? So, we could possibly say that maybe the strength of the Internet of Things is not just what new and bizarre devices we can add to it, like coffee pots, right, or pet feeders, or things like that, but what kind of innovative applications can we make of them? You've also got, you know, if you had the web being built on the internet, that would suggest that a web of things could be built on the Internet of Things. And what would that look like? What would Internet of Things apps look like? What would they do? What are the innovative ways that we can put them together? That's the fourth platform. And might there be a killer application for the Internet of Things? Might there be something that you realize can be done that you were never able to do before? I like to think the answer to that question is yes. And that innovative or killer app is going to be related to insight and knowledge. Because there is this circle here, this circle between the technologies, the items, and the data. Just like that other one thing that we saw. This is simply another representation of that previous slide that we had. Data is really going to be the driving thing behind it, and making sense of that data is going to be the most desired task. So data is the language, I say, data is the language and the currency of the fourth platform. Now, the issue that we have with respect to analytics is clearly we are, if you look at those other ones, we're generating data faster than we can analyze it. That's a major issue. How can we possibly address that issue? It's not just an issue of throwing more computing at it. It's certainly not an issue of throwing more storage space at it. It's an issue of coming up with innovative ways to do analysis. Okay? One of the challenges with respect to doing analysis might say, don't fall for the hype. Why is a data set that is 20 yottabytes better than a data set that's 20 petabytes? Is it really the size that makes the difference? You know, we would be led to believe that it was. The more data we can get, the more answers we can get. But no, it's the analytics. It's how are we going to use that data? So if you're looking at these data sets, you know, what you really want to do in terms of this analysis is say, how can we optimize the signal-to-noise ratio? That's what big data analytics should be. Okay, and coming up with new ways to do that. One of the other challenges is the fact is there's not a lot of people who know how to do that. Okay? And clearly, when you're talking about all this data such as that generated by the Internet of Things, you're also facing, with the presence of that data, you're facing not just the technological problems, but you're facing all these things with privacy, legality, and social. So, and this is big data, so by adding the Internet of Things is only going to increase these challenges by orders of magnitude, or maybe not. Because we've always been worried about so-called information overload. So, if we think about data analytics, data science, you know, here's the definition that Wikipedia, which is obviously the repository of human knowledge, right? Is it the process of obtaining optimal or realistic decisions based on existing data? Doesn't say anything about size. It's talking about using what you've got most effectively. Okay? And the other one, data analytics is the extensive use of data. Statistical analysis, predictive models, management decisions, etc. Once again, we're not talking about size. We're not restricting the scope of that field based on size, but only based on value. Okay? Now, if you believe the hype about big data, it basically suggests that if you got enough data and you pump big data into the black box of an analytic engines, which is typically on the cloud, that you automatically get all these insights. You know, these are the people who might say the cure for cancer is out there in the data. We just have to find it. Right? And it might be true, but it's probably not simply because of sheer size. Here's a quote that I like from Michael Jordan, and this is not the basketball player, at Berkeley, you know, which is talking about one of these fallacies, I believe. When you have large amounts of data, your appetite gets larger. And if it's growing faster than many of your inferences. In other words, you get complacent. And why not like traditional analysis? Can't we say, all right, we can do this, but there's a lot of noise, and let's have error bars as well. That all the answers are not going to be there simply by virtue of its size. Understanding when big data is better. Okay, I'm not going to totally say that large data sets are bad. Outliers, things that don't occur very often. Rare sets of data. Missing values. Rare events. And here I'm going to play the physics card. Some of you might have read about this new type of particle that was discovered, about pentaquarks. Okay? Now that was discovered simply because you collected enough data, because it's so rare. So there's a good reason for collecting all that data if, in fact, you have the right kind of analytic goals, right? Okay, so the conclusion of that would be with the Internet of Things, with the analytics, in that case, what we really have to learn in data science is to say, how do we filter data as well as analyze the data? And clearly there's a lot of stuff that we don't need, that we may not need to know. All right? So what we have in the case of this fourth platform, or this fourth quadrant, is this idea about what is the relationships between more people, in terms of the skills that you can put, and the more machines. Okay? And what we see here are sort of the predictable current kinds of models. You know, you have lots of machines, which means you can have reduced number of people to satisfy issues of big data and big computing, whereas with more people and fewer machines, you can get great insights into things like social network or web science and those kinds of things. You know, us is the experiment. But up here, we're saying, in the case of more people and more machines, this fourth quadrant is sort of where we're looking at when we put these things together to come up with this fourth platform. Okay? So maybe sharing the big data analytics in that way is, in fact, what that fourth quadrant is all about. So to me, then, the intersection of big data, the Internet of Things, and data analytics is, we could say, is a computationally enabled, or the fourth platform, is a computationally enabled sense-making network of expertise, data, software, models, and narratives, all of which these applications depend upon the presence of large amounts of data, the communication facilities that might be provided in the Internet of Things, and understanding and analyzing that data that we hope to be able to do with data analytics. Sense making and expertise is talking about turning data into knowledge, turning data into insights. And I would contend then that we have the capability to do that. So, what I want to leave you with, the ideas that I want to leave you with, is that new forms of data from new data sources, such as all these things that we have the possibility now to connect, will allow us to answer new old questions in new ways, but we cannot overlook the new questions that might result as a result of that technology. And we can say in that case too is that it's not just big data, it's not just the Internet of Things, it's not just analytics. There's a lot of other disruptive, innovative things that we have to learn how to do. Clearly, one way that the big data community deals with these data sets that are otherwise unmanageable is by analyzing data flows versus data sets. So rather than store it, you're looking at it as it comes past you. Clearly, that's what you see a lot in social media. Who cares about storing tweets? You know, if you store tweets and figure it's going to take you a week to analyze them, most of that information is old news anyway. So there's got to be new technologies that help support the building of this kind of capability. Okay? And what I basically would say is that if we have this dream of what I call the fourth platform or the fourth quadrant, which has this sense-making network of knowledge and expertise, that thing that was in the middle of big data, data science or analytics, and the Internet of Things might provide a gateway to it. And it might be useful in that sense to think about the sum rather than just the parts. Because, once again, back to that idea, is that each of those fields are closely related to one another, right? They evolved with one another. And in many cases, they have more meaning if they're taken in context, taken in conjunction, rather than taken individually. Another thing is avoid the hype. Right? You know, one of the things we have like that, you know, you could ask companies, do you have a big data plan? What does that mean? That's hype. Do you have an Internet of Things business plan? I don't know. Avoid the hype. And think about the innovation. And think about it as the platform, not the technologies. That's what I would say. And if we achieve this fourth platform, you know, one of the other issues that we're going to have with this is not only applying the innovative technologies, but we're going to have responsibilities that perhaps we never imagined. People always talk about privacy. Well, this is privacy to the max when we're thinking about this. You know, we can't even begin to imagine some level of the non-technological challenges that we might encounter in the future. But I do believe by putting these technologies together with this sort of this vision of the fourth platform or the fourth quadrant, that we do have an unprecedented opportunity to all of a sudden take all this data that we've got, and I don't mean that in the context of big data, take all these facts that we've got and add them together in such a way that we actually can create knowledge and insight. So, thank you.